Hello, my name is Clayton, and welcome to another episode of the Watch Dang Podcast. I'm a professional dog runner and watch enthusiast talking to his pals about dogs and watches. How is everybody doing? Thank you so much for listening. You know I appreciate it. And I am joined by a good friend. I believe it's, what, third time on the podcast?
Yeah, the third time, which I'm shocked that you're having me on again.
Oh, gosh, no surprise whatsoever. My good friend, photographer extraordinaire, you'll hear more about that in a bit. Corey, Kentucky man, thank you so much for coming back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Fighting a cold, but other than that, I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm sure now you were telling me off air you have two little ones in school, so I'm sure they're going to be bringing lovely things home, colds, viruses, oh, all that stuff. So I'm sure you're just going to be like perpetually sick until next June when school's out.
Yeah, that's how it goes. And that's not something I really understood until I started having kids in school. And then everybody around me is like, oh, yeah, that's normal. Like, everyone just gets sick constantly.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
Like, oh, cool.
My sister, she has three boys, and yeah, she's just sick. Every time I talk to her in the winter or during the school year, you know, she's hacking up a lung and like, just get used to it. Sometimes it escalates. It like baseline is a cold, but then maybe you'll get like strep throat or really bad flu or something. So,
which luckily it seems like anytime it happens to us, it's pretty much just a cold, like, you know, just coughing, runny noses, that sort of thing. But yeah, fortunately, we haven't gotten anything too serious.
So actually in my off-leash group and a lot of dog parks and doggy daycares, kennel cough is going around. It's essentially the doggy version of a common cold. Mostly harmless. A lot of vets won't even prescribe like antibiotics or anything like that, but it's very contagious. And for older dogs especially, it can escalate kind of like a cold in humans. It can sometimes turn into like pneumonia or something like that. That can happen with dogs. So that is going around. Vets are saying it's one of the worst years that they've ever seen for kennel cough. And so dogs get vaccinated for it, but kind of like us with the flu shot, there are different strains. So they can still get it even when they are vaccinated for it. So
interesting.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. And I even took a couple days off my off-leash group last week just to sort of stop the cycle of kennel cough going through. But yeah, it's scary. You have to be careful and sanitize everything. And, you know, if they share water bowls or, you know, that's kind of how you get it. So it's just kind of like sending your kids to school. Sometimes dogs pick things up too. But yeah, it's stressful sometimes. You don't, dogs have to be out 2 weeks. They can't be around other dogs for 2 weeks typically when that happens. So yeah. Anyway, so how you been? You add any new watches lately? I think you have. Yes, you have.
Well, since the last time I was on, I remember debating on whether I was going to get the SPB 317.
Yes.
And I did. Like shortly after that episode, I bought one. So the Seiko SPB 317, a lot of people call it the mini turtle, but I find that it's
or like a more slim accurate turtle,
description
right?
I'm sorry, slim turtle, but I think slim Willard is kind of more of an accurate representation because it's essentially the Willard dial, you know, the similar hands and indices. And even the case design is, from what I can tell, mostly a Willard without the crazy crown guard.
Yep.
But so I've been wearing it pretty much ever since. I think I bought it in mid July, and then I've worn it pretty much ever since then. I've had it off the wrist for just a few days, because I got the, I actually recently bought a Citizen like a couple weeks ago, a little, I forget the nomenclature for it. NY009, I think, is probably the, but it's got a Miyota 8000 series movement, so it's an automatic. And I've kind of gotten into Citizen a little bit, like kind of researching their stuff and their divers and just pro masters in general. And
oh yeah,
so I'm kind of going down that rabbit hole a little bit. But other than wearing that for a few days, just SPB 317's been on the wrist for months, essentially.
Yeah, you're good about that. You'll buy a watch and then you'll just kind of be monogamous for a few months until you feel the need to maybe add something else or move on from a watch. But yeah, you're pretty good about just wearing something.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually pretty true. I mean, I bought this in like mid-July and it's now, well, it's pretty much October and the power reserve hasn't died. So, you know, I've only had it off the wrist for at most 24 hours at a time. So yeah, that's how I tend to be. I get in these patterns where it's just months at a time, the same watch.
Now that watch has the dreaded 6R movement. How is it running?
It's actually running pretty good. Like very consistent plus 13 a day is which for me, I perfectly acceptable, and I'm happy with that. Now the Citizen with the 8,000 Miyota. I can't remember the reference. 8204 is what it has in it. That's been running at like a plus 7.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I've actually found that movement to be pretty accurate. And, that's not just one day of measuring. It's been several days and it's pretty consistent at the plus 7 anytime I wear it. So I've actually been pretty impressed with that so far.
Yeah, I think Miyota, I think they keep pretty good time. I think where the complaints come in is they don't feel great to wind, and also the rotor noise.
I
think like what's Jody's thing, like the dreaded rotor noise kittens of doom or whatever it is. Like, yeah, I think yeah. I think that's where Miyota kind of gets a knock, but I think they're generally pretty good timekeepers. There's a Miyota in this watch I'm wearing today too. We'll get to it in a bit, and I actually not worn it enough really to track how accurate it is, but maybe I should do that just to see. But so is that Citizen? It looks like an older watch, but is that still a regular production watch? Is that still being made?
So I'm not exactly sure. It is a watch that was made kind of a while ago. I think they've had a couple different production runs of it, if I'm correct. The original production run had the 8203 in it, which didn't have hacking, and it had 40 hours of power reserve. And then they, I think, came out with an updated version of it with the 8204, which added hacking and 2 extra hours of power reserve. But the dial, it's something I've actually been on forums and stuff, the dial still says 8203 on the dial, but on the case back, it says 8204. So
interesting.
I think the older versions that you can get, and I want to say like 5, 6, 7 year old, that kind of time frame, those have the 8203, and then the newer ones have the 8204. But yeah, it does look like kind of an older design. Some people say that the 12-hour marker looks like adult underwear, like men's underwear or adult diapers, I think.
Whitey tighties.
It looks like an adult diaper. Someone pointed that out to me, and I was like, oh yeah, I guess I can kind of see that. And I think it's kind of known for that.
It needs a nickname then.
Yeah.
The BVD, the Citizen BVDs or something.
Yeah. It has a very stubby hour hand, which is kind of, a lot of people, it's very short and stubby, and typically it's not something people like, but it's kind of cute.
I'm still thinking of potential nicknames. Dependable, dependsable. I don't know.
The depends. The Citizen depends.
It's a dependsable watch. Oh boy.
I love it.
All right. So, real quick for my wrist check, I am wearing the Carpenter M19 field watch. It's sort of like a dress field watch. I got it as an anniversary gift a couple years ago from my in-laws. It's a micro brand, and we were talking off air. I think they're still, I follow them on Instagram, but I never really see any activity on their account. But I know they've been featured on Teddy Baldessar's channel, and Time to Go Travel, that channel. He's had this, a variation of this watch on. It's a chunky boy. It's a kind of high polish, but it has wire lugs. It's very, very nice, but, we'll get into in a second. It has zero AR coding. So it is really, really tricky to take a photo of, for sure. So we need your skills. I need your skills and expertise to figure out how in the world to get a nice photo of this watch. Before we get into that, I want to just pick your brain and maybe do like a little pre-chat topic here. Just as we were getting ready to record, I saw a Facebook post and somebody, you know, the generally accepted holy trinity of watches is Vacheron, Patek Philippe, and Audemars Piguet. And he was just throwing it out there. What is your personal holy trinity? And I can't remember what his was. I think it was like Rolex, Breguet, and Grand Seiko were his. Now, that's pretty broad. Like, what is that, three brands that you respect but necessarily maybe wouldn't buy or can't afford to buy? Or is that three brands you own and can't afford to buy and just respect what they do, even if they're maybe not in the generally accepted sort of holy trinity? So I thought it might be fun, put you on the spot here. I probably have an idea of what two of the brands are, but what's sort of your holy trinity of watchmaking and watches, and why?
Yeah, that is, it is interesting, because when someone says, what is your holy trinity? I think of like my favorite, yes, like my three favorite.
That's that what I put would on think the of too.
Right, like the pedestal. Gosh, that is interesting, because I'm going to feel like such a Philistine. <'Cause> it's like, so uncultured swine, because holy trinity... Seiko for one.
Yep.
Just because that's the brand that's happens to be my favorite. And I would actually somewhat cheat, but I would separate Seiko and Grand Seiko probably for the you know, for this thought exercise.
Yes.
And put Grand Seiko as on the like the second slot too. And then for the third, gosh, I don't know. Maybe Zen, because there's a lot of Zen design language and models that I absolutely love. I mean, I could, you know, in theory, have an entire collection of Zen.
Yeah.
They just have so many cool watches. So possibly Zen. As far as, gosh, I don't know. I tend to just keep getting drawn to Japan. So Seiko, obviously Grand Seiko. And then I've been sucked into Citizen. I've always kind of respected their design language and their history as it relates to like diving. I know in recreational as well as technical diving, you know, in the 80s and 90s, Citizen was very, very loved and used a lot, like in military settings and stuff. So they have such a unique design that I just really love and kind of gravitate towards. So I don't know, maybe even, and I even say that now because I'm starting to get sucked down. So that may be just recency bias or whatever.
Yeah.
So Citizen may be kind of like not on the Holy Trinity, but kind of weaseling its way in. So of just brands that you know, gosh, dadgummit, use this term, speak to me. Seiko, Grand Seiko, and Zen. Are probably because Zen's so tool watchy, you know, and
yeah,
so utilitarian and rugged and over designed and over engineered. And I love that about them. So probably that. But I mean, you know, it's so funny because then I look at other brands like Patek and Vacheron and AP, and there are some like incredible, like hot horology watches that are just gorgeous and just, oh, like Glashütte and Lange and all that stuff. So those are the ones I look online and just kind of salivate over just how gorgeous and the craftsmanship and all that stuff. But when it comes to what I want on my wrist, it's such a different thing. You know what,
yes,
I mean? Like it's a very...
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah. That's interesting for me. So I would tentatively say Seiko, Grand Seiko, Zen. What about you?
Yeah, it's tricky. I don't know how to answer this, honestly. So I'm not going to. No, just kidding. Yeah, I think I would go with brands I've owned and can, you know, reasonably afford. Obviously, we all like have these dream watches, but I tend not to pay attention a lot to, I don't know, to brands. Like, I'm aware of them, but like Longa, do I really keep 100% tabs on what Longa is doing? Not really, because they're just not something I'm ever going to afford. Now, I enjoy learning about them and looking at pictures of them, but I don't know that much about Longa or even like what Patek is doing. AP, I don't love the direction they're going. Everything I see that they come out with is just kind of god awful hideous to me.
Actually, kind of agree with that.
I like the Royal Oak. I've seen one in person. My friend Penny had one, and it was cool. It was beautiful. I liked the way it wore. The bracelet was nice. I've actually seen a Nautilus chronograph. Where I bought some watches before, the they used to be a Patek AD, and he was wearing, casually just wearing a Nautilus. My buddy John, who you know from the Discord, Meteorite from the Discord,
right.
he and I went in there, and he's like, yeah, he let us try it on and everything. I was like, okay, this is something. This is cool. This is not a watch you get to check out and get hands on with every day. But yeah, though, even like a lot of what Patek does, I'm just not crazy into it. So, oh, this is hard. I think Seiko has to be in there for a Holy Trinity for me. I just keep going back to the brand. Tons of respect for what they do. You know, we know about their diving history, but so many other innovations outside of that, of course, with quartz. And that's really where at the moment, but yeah, most of this year even, I've just been really into vintage Seiko quartz. I bought a 7828 chronograph, which was the first analog quartz chronograph ever. So that movement is has historical relevance. So many different variations. You can have a collection or sub collection just out of those watches alone, which I love. Still serviceable, really a well built movement. Plus all the divers I've owned. I have the SJE093 now, which is, you know, a reissue of the first Seiko dive watch ever. Which I've been enjoying. It's actually the last watch I bought 2 months now since I bought a watch, which is
that's kind of a long time for me. Yeah.
So I really have nothing on the horizon either. So
really, even still, nothing on the horizon.
Well, I did put an order in for that new FXD because I love the black. The new black FXD they came out with. Everybody said it was boring, but to me, that's like the quintessential Pelagos. I think that's my favorite Pelagos, narrowly beating out the LHD.
Yeah, I like it too.
Yeah.
But
so Seiko has to be in there. And then I look at like the, I've been very fortunate to own, you know, quite a few luxury brands. And then I go through and like, what were my favorite luxury brands to own? Rolex has, I know it has a lot of baggage. They're not really my favorite brand by any means. I only like a couple of their watches. But I've just had like tremendous luck with them. Just the quality is there. I mean, they're not doing any high horology thing. They don't have to. They are synonymous with luxury and wealth to the general population. Their profits are like four times more than their nearest competitor. Like, they don't have to do that. I know as watch enthusiasts, maybe we want them to, but they don't have the need to do that. They just make rock solid tool watches. We've built them into something, but really they're just no nonsense watches. Very brutalist, industrial looking watches for the most part. That just work well. I mean, I wore my Air King for 7 or 8 days straight. I mean, it didn't deviate at all. I mean, the timekeeping is crazy. They're so comfortable. The bracelets are amazing. The bezel action on the Submariner is otherworldly amazing. That's valuable to me in a dive watch. Even though I didn't really connect with that watch, I'll stand by it 100%. The bezel action is a dream come true for a dive watch enthusiast. It really is. So Rolex has to be in there. And then what are the other, I don't know, probably like my second, it's between Moser and Cartier. Those are the two other luxury brands I've obviously been lucky and fortunate enough to own, and that just really feel next level. But I think I have to go with Moser. It's a high horology brand. The decoration on the movement and just looking at that movement is beautiful. You know, red gold rotor, just the perlage work and some of the striping that's done on that movement. So yeah, I'd have to go Seiko Rolex Moser, I think, for my nice. Holy Trinity, but it's always subject to change. Cartier is up there. I think about the luxury brands I've owned and how I would rank them. And unfortunately, I think like Grand Seiko and Omega are probably toward the bottom. And that's just like fitment issues, really. Grand Seiko, I can't ever, I don't know if I'll ever buy one again until I can buy one of their, have one of their bracelets actually like work on me and buy, maybe be attracted to one of them that has micro adjust. Cause every Grand Seiko I seem to like just has the regular clasp. So,
yeah. or you just have to go with the rule of wearing it on a strap, like a leather strap yeah. or something, depending on the model.
Which I've done yeah. before, but then I don't yeah. know, something, they never stick around. They're just one of those brands that has never had, and Omega's been the same way. They're easily disposable in my collection. Like if I right. if I have my eyes on something new and shiny, like the latest Grand Seiko I have is, I have no like affection towards it. Like, okay, yeah, that's going to be sacrificed.
Yeah.
So yeah. yeah.
You know what's funny is we talk about Grand Seiko and they're in my Holy Trinity, but it's funny. Though I've owned two of them, but then they have so many other models that I've seen in person or online or whatever that I just, oh, they're just, I love. I just fall head over heels for them. But I think if you ask me my biggest purchase regret, it would probably be the first Grand Seiko I bought, which was the SBGR 261. So I tried the King Seiko on the limited edition, the first one that came out with. I tried that on the day I went to go buy the Grand Seiko and I fell in love with it on my wrist. The case design, the lugs, the markers, it was just gorgeous. I think it was more me.
Yeah.
If I had to, and then for a split second, I was like, ooh, I could get this over this Grand Seiko I'm thinking about buying and it's cheaper.
Right.
So that's a plus. And, I ended up, I was like, nah, I came in here for the Grand Seiko. I'm just going to get the Grand Seiko. And so I ended up getting the Grand Seiko, loved it. I mean, it was great. But I kind of look back and regret. I'm like, I wish I would have bought that King Seiko over the Grand Seiko in that moment. It probably would have stuck around longer.
Yeah.
And I think just the case design, the case on the, it's the same case as the SBGM 211 or 221, the GMT that everybody loves. Same case design. It's almost the exact same watch without the GMT, the SBGR 261. And that's the one I owned, my first one. But the case design just wasn't as great, but the King Seiko was just something else on wrist. I think it's the SJE083. But it was, so it's funny. Grand Seiko's on my Holy Trinity, but I would have, it's like my biggest regret or whatever buying is involves a Grand Seiko. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. They're just not very, the cases are, they're too thick in most cases. That's why I really, yeah. I love quartz anyway. So 9F is the, I know most people gravitate towards Spring Drive or one of their high beat automatics, but I'm a quartz guy and I love the movements. That's what I love about Grand Seiko, the dials, but wearing them has never really been all that great for me. I just don't, never, between the bracelets and the case thickness and some of the bracelets don't, I know you're not a bracelet guy. You take the bracelet off. That's no issue for me. I'm not necessarily a bracelet guy, but if a watch comes on a bracelet, I get really frustrated when it does not work. So, So I don't know, just between all of those things, I think it's a brand I like to admire for the movement technology and all that, but I don't know that I'll buy another one.
Interesting. Yeah. That's funny. You know, the only watch that I've worn a bracelet on for any length of time was my second Grand Seiko, which was the SBGX 261, the quartz, black dial quartz. I tried the bracelet on that and it was so comfortable and I thought it looked so good. And it, like, there was a period of time for like maybe a week or so where I wore that watch around on the bracelet. Only time I've ever done that. And it's funny because it just so happened to be a Grand Seiko.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, you're right. I take a bracelet off a watch if it comes on it and chuck it in the trash and never look at it again. Typically, just wear it on a NATO.
Yeah. I really like to wear my watches tight. So, I know most people don't have issue with the lack of micro adjust on Grand Seiko because most people don't mind a watch to be a little loose. Generally, it gives me like the heebie jeebies. I hate a watch flopping around on my wrist. Like, I just don't like that feeling at all. It has to be,
absolutely,
it has to be skin tight. That's just the way I prefer to wear a watch because I'm moving around a lot. And if something, the other night I wore that Fortis out to hike with my dogs and I had it on the stock strap, which is a rubber strap that you have to cut to fit. And it's just a little too loose and it was driving me absolutely crazy because I was out in the woods hiking. It's just flopping around. It's moving around on my wrist. And like, I almost took it off and put it in my pocket. I can't stand that. So, but anyway, all right. Well, I guess we should get into the main topic.
Oh yeah. Right.
Yeah. We're here to do that. Of course, in the age of social media, Instagram, Facebook, we're in Discord groups where we share photos of our watches. We're constantly, if you're anything like me, and I'm sure you, we are constantly looking at our wrist, taking photos of our watch with our wrist shots of our watch with our phone. And it's a little tricky to do sometimes. I know we have like yellow lighting throughout our house. It's really hard to get like an acceptable, and I'm no skilled photographer. And I see a lot of photos on Instagram that are awesome, but I also see a lot that maybe not so much, my own included. So I thought I'd go to you for tips and advice and maybe anybody who just wants like watch photo taking 101 here, basic beginner college course. You are one of the best photographers that I know personally. Your Instagram, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes so you can see Corey's work. Man, even your underwater photos that you've taken, I mean, you just have the skill you have in taking photos of watches is unparalleled in my opinion. You could do it professionally. You are a professional photographer in a sense, right?
Thank you for that high praise. So here's the deal. I am a photographer, been a photographer probably 15 years or so. I did a lot of wedding work, shooting weddings.
Okay.
I feel like weddings and real estate and reportage, which is kind of like documentary work of people, kind of candid type stuff. That's kind of my strong suit, I think. Real estate photography in the last several years is the bulk of what I've done professionally. I feel like that's my sweet spot and probably the area I'm most knowledgeable in. I will make the distinction. I am not a product photographer, which I feel like watch photography, if you're really in the weeds for watch photography, and if you're on Instagram and you see a lot of stylized, shots of watches, you know, with props around it or lighting.
Yeah.
That's more in the genre of product photography, where you're spending a lot of time setting up a shot. It's very thoughtful, very considered. You may be introducing lighting into the scenario, like artificial lighting and lighting it a certain way. So that is almost a whole genre in and of itself of watch photography, whereas like real estate's a whole nother genre. There's so many different things to learn, techniques to learn. And even rules. I mean, a lot of people think of photography as very subjective, and it is in a lot of cases. You know, it's art. A lot of art is subjective. But there are certain genres like product photography or real estate photography where there are actually a lot of rules to follow if you want to do things properly, I guess. So by and large, if you go on Instagram and see a lot of like what I would consider very high-end watch photography, It's that. It's someone who has taken a lot of time to like practice product photography. Whereas I feel like what I do is just like, I'm just trying to get a good looking wrist shot, like more or less. And anytime I do an off the wrist shot, I'm just kind of taking it off and throwing it down on the ground outside somewhere and just trying to get like a nice angle of it.
I think you're selling yourself short there. It looks like it's real deal professional stuff. Even your basic wrist shots are like, whoa.
Yeah. And I mean, I do take what I know, you know, I do take what I know of photography and apply it to that. And then, and even editing too, like editing's another side of it that I enjoy. So I'm taking a wrist shot into Lightroom and actually spending, you know, 5 minutes or so, or even sometimes even more editing it before I even post it to the Discord or whatever. So yeah, you know, it's, I am taking that knowledge of just, you know, how to use my camera and lighting and all that stuff and applying it. But yeah, it's, I think there is a little bit of a distinction between what I do, which is, and then like, you know, someone who wants to get into like the actual product photography side right. of it. But yeah, you're right. There is, I mean, I use a camera. I don't use my phone. I just find there's a certain camera I have that I really like with a certain focal length that I feel like is great for watches, like on the wrist shots. And we'll get into that. Like, just if you use too wide of an angle, it'll distort the watch and it won't look as, you know, it won't look as good. You want something with a little bit of compression that's going to, you know, exemplify its features and whatnot. But lighting is really the big key. I like to do natural light. So I'll just go outside. A lot of my wrist shots, I go outside my front door and I'm on my patio and it's in the shade. So it's nice, soft, even lighting. You don't have harsh shadows. And I'm kind of playing with the watch, to see how the indices kind of play with the light and, you know, my angle and all that stuff. But, soft, even lighting is typically what I like. I don't like okay. to go stick it out in direct sunlight, and take shots. Every now and then I will, but that's probably the biggest takeaway for me is just as far as lighting goes, is you want like window light coming in. If you want to go buy a window light, turn off. And so that's my thing too. If you're inside and you have a bunch of artificial lighting on, you may have different color temperature bulbs that are more warm or more cold, and those clash. They may not make the watch look as great. So my advice would be just even turn off lights in the house and then go by a window where there's lots of natural light coming okay. in. And then that right there will create nice color temperature over the, you know, your arm or the watch or whatever, nice, soft, even lighting. You won't have lighting that's just going shooting straight down from above, like if you have can lights or ceiling fans, that creates kind of harsh shadows. So, I mean, even it's kind of the same thing in portraiture. I like on a wedding day when I'm getting shots of, you know, the groom or whatever getting ready, I turn lights off in the room and wow. try to get them to stand by a window where there's lights of, if there's lots of natural light, that is.
Yeah.
And to me, you get nice. That just looks good to me. Same for real estate. It's kind of funny. I actually shoot real estate listings with all the lights off in the house. And people kind of like cock their eyebrows at me like, what now? But when all the windows, all shades are open, natural light streams in, and I photograph a house with natural and pleasing and inviting lighting. But that's a whole, you know.
Now, do you technique. Do anything to brighten those up, like in post-production, or do you just leave them as is?
Yeah. So the goal that I do is try to make things look as natural as possible. A lot of houses, when you have a bunch of lights on, it's you deal with a lot of mixed color temperatures, and it creates harsh color. If you just turn lights off and just have the natural light streaming in, it looks so much more inviting and natural to me. And I'm not the only one who. Kind of, I've got this technique from other people I look up to, but so you can adjust your exposure to make the exposure in the room proper, like, you know, properly lit, properly bright, and that sort of thing. And there's even, you actually use a flash, a natural light exposure, and then a flash exposure to help with highlights and stuff. That's a whole different, technique. The end result is I like to make it look natural.
Okay.
I mean, I can link. Website, and you can see all that stuff too. But anyway, I like natural light. That's the whole point. So cool. same with
no. That's with a my good watch. Tip. That's a good tip because our lighting in our house, like I said, it's yellow. It's not great. So that's typically what I try to do, we have a three season room, and that's where I find a lot of my watch shots probably look the same. Like if you're on Discord with me or yep. I don't really post on Instagram that much, but because they are all the same in the exact same spot every time, because I've just found yep. a room that I use with natural light coming in. There are trees around it, a little bit of just light comes in, not direct sunlight. So right. I feel like that's the best room. So why don't we do this? Let's do like watch photo taking 101, 201, and 301. We'll get advanced as we go. So I'm a regular guy who just wants to take, I don't have a camera, just my phone, Android, Samsung, or iPhone. I just want to take like a nice picture of my watch and put it on Facebook or Instagram. How do I do that? How do I do that? Like without it looking blurry? You know, we can talk about like watches. I think it probably is different with every watch, depending on the AR coding, like this Carpenter here, zero AR coding. So how do I take a picture of a watch without the phone, the reflection of the phone or my face being in the crystal, or like if I'm outside, a lot of times trees get in there or whatever's around. So I'm sure AR coding plays a huge role in the photo of a watch, but so watch photo taking 101. Go for
it. Gosh, so the phone thing, I feel a little bit unqualified to talk about because I never shoot with my phone.
Huh, interesting.
And I know there are people who do, you know, with their phone, and they're actually really good at it. So I would suggest just if you're going to do wrist shots, there's a dog outside my window barking.
Oh, geez. hope it's not yours.
Not mine. Oh. I don't know where he came from. Anyway, if you're going to do wrist shots with your phone, I would suggest instead of opening your phone app and just using the default lens, which is fairly wide angle.
Yep.
I would suggest trying to zoom, either switch to a more telephoto lens if you have that, or just zoom, you know, pinch to zoom in on the camera so it zooms in a little bit. That you're going to be cropping the sensor, so you're going to be losing megapixels if you do that. But if you're in good lighting, that won't be that big of a deal anyway. You'll still have good quality. But I feel like that extra bit of compression that you're going to get from cropping in or zooming in right away will, you know, have less distortion of the watch instead of it being super wide angle. So I would suggest like going to 1.25 times or 1.5 times zoom on your, you know, if you don't have it like a more telephoto lens. I think for me, anytime I have tried to get a video, like a wrist roll on my phone, I have done that. And I feel like that kind of is a better representation from a focal length, you know, than super wide angle. But that's just me. Go try to find some nice, soft, even lighting. Like we were talking about, you have that spot that you like to go to.
Yep.
I'm the same way with wrist shots. I'll just go step out right out my front door on my patio, and that the sun never, you know, it goes left to right in our house, not front to back. So the sun's never directly in that area. And so it's nice, just bright, but soft, even lighting. And that is nice. If you're in the woods or outdoors, you're having to compete with a lot of dappled lighting. Like if the sun is out, so like, you know, the trees are going to block some. So you'll have like light spots all over your watch or your arm. That can be tough to deal with. So try to find, like if you're out and about and try to find like a shady spot, or just direct sunlight altogether would be even better. Your crystal, if you don't have a lot of good anti-reflective coating, that can be very challenging because you're getting reflections like crazy.
Yeah.
And
this Carpenter's a nightmare for that.
Yes. Yeah. So you do have to try to, you know, play with the angle and try to find a good angle. Once again, if you're under just like an overcast sky, and that's going to be a little easier to overcome than if there's a bunch of trees around. Once again, a wide angle lens, that'll be harder to overcome. So if you zoom in a little bit and crop in or get closer to your watch, that should help with reflections. But that's funny because the Hamilton I used to have, the khaki field, was like that.
Yes.
It was had a slight dome to the crystal, and it had no AR coating at all. And it was just a nightmare to try to get a good shot of that, especially outside.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are tricky. And I don't know the best techniques to try to overcome just horrible AR coating.
Angles, I guess you're right. Yeah.
Try to play with angles and then soft, even lighting. Try to stay away from dappled light, or harsh light. And then probably try to use a focal length if you can. That's not super wide angle. That's more telephoto. I say telephoto, but just kind of zoomed in more where you don't have a lot of context. But I would recommend that. And then editing to me is always like, it's almost kind of like half the fun. So I'm very involved. Like I'll just take a camera with an SD card and have to plug the SD card into the computer. And so most people, I feel like, just on their phone and directly upload to Instagram, you know, but yeah. I have so many different, it feels like such an ancient way of doing photography.
That's how I do it. Know? Guilty as charged.
the phone and upload straight?
I use like the editor. I do have an editing app, but sometimes I'll just, you were saying, zooming in when you take a picture. Do both. Like sometimes I will do that when I'm taking the picture, but then other times I'll just take it at, you know, stock, like one time zoom, and then I'll pinch it and zoom in to the existing photo. So I'll do it both ways sometimes, depending on the lighting. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. If I get a nice photo, it's completely by accident. This is why we need you.
I like the photos of the Mosers. I feel like even your indoor shots of the Moser, I feel like you do a really good job of, getting the essence of that dial.
Yeah, I try because it looks different in every type of lighting. That's why that watch is, it's not a boring watch. And part of the fun is because it's, if you don't know what this watch looks like, it has nothing. It has a beautiful blue, like Fume dial, but there's no markings or branding or anything. It's a sterile dial. It's called their concept dial. But it may on the outside look like a boring watch, but boy, that is a fun watch. I don't know if I'd send that watch to you just cause you know, it's expensive and everything, but boy, no. I'd love to have you hire you to get some really excellent pictures of that watch. I bet you could do some amazing things with it.
That would be fun in theory, but I'm with you. Please don't send that. I'd be way too nervous.
Yeah. But that's a fun watch to take pictures of because the dial does change character in no matter what type of lighting you're in. So, also that crystal does not have very much AR coating, but that's kind of fun because like the dial is blue. So I've taken some, I go outside and I'll, it reflects the clouds in the sky. So I can take a picture of that and then make it look like, you know, the cloud is on the dial kind of with the blue sky of the dial. So it looks really pretty awesome, I think.
There's probably one you're thinking of that you've shared that you did that with. Yeah. And I thought that was incredible.
Thanks.
Like with given that watch, the blue dial and the clouds on it, that looked really cool.
Yeah.
And that was a good use of not having good AR coding. And I feel like that's part of it too. The creativity of you using that to your advantage. Like, you know, you got to have that creativity there. And I thought that was very well done.
But if you go, if there are trees around, like forget about it. All you see are the trees. It is an easy watch to take photos of in certain aspects, but you have to be in the right setting because if you are in the woods and you want to take a picture of it, forget about it. All you see are leaves and branches and that's where I spend a lot of time in the woods. So I wish I could take more like really cool outside shots, like on trails and stuff, because I feel like a lot of the watches I have just reflect all of that and you can't really see the dial. But the brands I've owned that have tremendous AR coating, Breitling, it doesn't even look Breitling and Damasco were the two in particular that you look like you can just reach into that dial and move the hands because it doesn't look like a crystal is there. I mean, incredible. Omega too. They achieved that by having AR coating on both sides and it's easy to scratch. Kind of like in a way defeats the purpose of sapphire crystal because you can visibly see yep. scratches on that outer layer of AR coating. But it makes taking photos of them much easier.
That's how my Zen U50 was. The crystal just didn't, it looked like it wasn't there.
Yeah.
You could just reach in and poke the hands. I loved that, but I'm kind of with you on getting shots in the woods or on trails. I find that hard too. If nothing else, because of just the green from the trees.
Yes. Everything's neon.
Yeah. And it, not just the crystal, but it will reflect on the case. And mm-hmm. so the case will be not an accurate, it just won't, the color reflection just won't be as nice. And so I actually don't really take, you know, I'm in the woods hiking a lot, but every time I try to get good shots, I come back and put them on the computer and I'm just like, I just don't like, I don't know, something about them.
Yeah.
I could fix a lot in editing to try to make it look better and more like I, you know, see with my eye, but, I don't know. It's tough, but, and that's the other thing too with editing is a lot of time I'll spend time getting the photo to look like what I'm seeing in real life and my vision of it, because a lot of times a camera, especially if you're shooting with a camera and you're shooting raw, like the image is a raw file, so it has no sort of, when you take photos with your phone, there's a lot of computational photography that's happening to the image, so they're baking in a lot of color saturation and they're cranking up like sharpness. And so I don't think a lot of people understand that. So you're not, the camera sensor is taking a photo, and then immediately after that, the computer is applying a ton of processing to it.
Mm.
So it's essentially editing your photo for you. And it's if it's in a JPEG format, but when you have a SLR or a dedicated camera, you can choose to shoot in what's called RAW, which means you take a photo and you're going to get a raw file. So it's a very flat image. It's what the camera sensor actually sees. And then instead of letting the camera apply all of its color saturations and stuff through a JPEG, it allows you to go edit it how you want it to be. So you actually are in control of the colors and the contrast and all that stuff. So, when I shoot raw, I think a lot of people will hear like edit and feel like it's kind of like distorting it or making it look unnatural or not, like that's not
filter
really
or
looked,
something.
But,
yeah.
Right. But I feel like I have more control when I can edit from a raw file and make it look more like it did in real life or more natural than if I let the camera choose for me using one of its JPEG profiles and bake in the color saturation where I feel like it's too saturated or whatever. So that's part of my process too. When I take photos, pretty much of anything, it doesn't matter if it's portraits or real estate or whatever, I'm shooting in a raw file format so I can control all of that. So that's a difference between shooting on with cameras or whatever and with a phone too.
Interesting. Huh. Do you use, I know a lot of us see commercials and even sometimes in reflections on YouTube channels and stuff, these ring lights. Do you use any sort of, third party lighting sources, for lack of a better term? You said mostly natural light, but do you subscribe to any of that? Cause I know a lot of people, I think, buy those. You can buy them on Amazon for pretty cheap just to have some other lighting source. But for video, I know on YouTube, a lot of people do that for sure. Do you subscribe to any of that stuff?
No, I don't. I haven't gotten into any sort of that. So where you see a lot of watch photography where it's like a product shoot where you have, you know, props around it. So people will do that. They'll get big soft boxes and light the scene a certain way. And you are very much controlling the lighting and making it look exactly like you want. So I don't. Most of my stuff is just natural light outside. But when I do like up close macro shots, because you'll see on my website or on Instagram, I'll set a watch on my desk and use the computer monitor light to actually light the shot and to light the, cause it, that the hands look really cool. You know, they pop and the different angle I'm shooting at. So on any of those shots where I'm just getting nice up close macro shots, I'm just using my computer monitor light, which sounds so ridiculous, but I think they look pretty cool.
Yeah.
One of my most favorite shots I've ever taken as far as a macro shot goes, is of the SLA-057. And I shot it at the desk, and I had my camera down really low, almost on a level plane with the bezel. And the computer light came in, and it, you can see the dome of the crystal, and it almost looks like it's oil filled. Like, have you ever seen those oil filled watches? Mm-hmm. It almost kind of looks like that. And I absolutely love that shot. But yeah, that was just using computer monitor with all the other lights in the house off. So I didn't have other above lights competing for it. It's a very moody type of style. But other than that, no, I don't use any lights. But I know there are a lot of photographers who do when they're setting up, you know, shots and spending a lot of time working on a certain shot, continuous lighting, big soft boxes, that sort of thing.
Cool. All right. So how about Watch Photography 201 now? We want to go with something a little bit more than our phones. We want to buy a camera, but we don't want to break the bank necessarily. What's a good camera if I just want to step up my watch photography game just a little bit?
Interesting. You can get like little mirrorless cameras. Like, I think, gosh, I'm not real versed in gear anymore. Like Canon, you can look at Canon or Nikon. Like, they have good offerings at the $300-$400 range, where you can change lenses, you know, interchangeable lens cameras. Probably start with Canon, Nikon, or Sony as far as brands.
Okay.
You know, and look at their mirrorless offerings that you can change lenses with. And you can even just get the standard kit lens that most of these cameras come with, which is going to be like a zoom lens. So they go fairly wide angle to fairly telephoto. That might be a good option. You can zoom into like a mid-range to get wrist shots and whatnot. I would recommend probably starting there, or Fujifilm is what I use actually. Personally for me, I use the Fuji X100T, which is about a decade old camera. And it has just a fixed lens. You can't zoom in or out. It's just one focal length. That's actually what I use for the vast majority of my shots. Any wrist shot you see me take is going to be on that camera. And pretty much every shot except for a dedicated macro shot of the dial is from that camera. But it's the focal length I find is a really good focal length for watch photography in general. And then if I do any macro work, it's a Fujifilm X-T1, which is another camera that's like a decade old, with a 60 millimeter macro lens that's dedicated for getting closer shots and stuff. But I would say just go Canon, Nikon, Sony, look at those brands, and you can find stuff $300-$500 range with a kit lens that would do you well. It would be good options to kind of get started if you want to go from a phone to an actual dedicated camera. And a lot of those have Wi-Fi too. So you can, I've never gotten into this, but you can, newer models, you can connect to your phone and transfer straight from the camera over to your phone, if you want to do it that way. So I think they've started to make it easier for people who just are used to the simplicity of a phone.
Okay.
And so you even have that option. You don't have to take the SD card and plug it into your computer like a Luddite. I would recommend kind of starting there. Okay.
I always worry about, because I actually have a digital camera, and I think it's a Canon. I can't really remember what it is, but I always worry about them becoming like obsolete quickly, it seems, because it's almost like a phone. It seems like the next year something better is going to come out, leaving my old camera in the dust. But sounds like, you know, you're using 10-year-old cameras, so that's not something I should worry about.
Yeah, it is true. I mean, it's tech, so tech's getting just But in the world of cameras, it's very incremental stuff that's very negligible. Cameras about a decade or so ago got to a point where every new release thereafter was just so negligible and incremental that it's like, you know, it doesn't really, there's not a noticeable gap in and image quality or anything like that. I mean,
probably like bells and whistles are better, but just regular photo taking is.
Yeah.
at a pretty high level.
The Wi-Fi function gets better,
yeah,
or the autofocus gets a little bit faster. And it's like the lion's share of features on a camera that come out year to year are just not features that I need in anything that I do with photography. So a 10, 12-year-old camera is perfectly adequate for me. And the image quality is just, most people are not going to be able to tell the difference between a 10, 12-year-old camera and a camera that was released this year as far as image quality is concerned. Hmm. It's just, yeah, online stuff after it's been edited or whatever, no one's going to be able to tell. And improvements in image quality in extreme examples are just so negligible. So it's just, in that regard, yeah, you can even go out and get used stuff that are years old. And I mean, I would, that would be like a case by case basis. Like if you came to me and said, hey, recommend me, I would go research and kind of like try to save you money and stuff. But yeah, you don't have to worry about getting outdated or yeah, anything like that. You can get a camera and just use it for years and years if you wanted to.
I cannot find the battery for mine. So I need to go on eBay. I'm assuming I can just pick one up on eBay. You can buy anything on eBay. So I'm assuming.
Yeah, you can. You can go find out the model, whatever, and you can just go get replacement ones on Amazon. Yeah, it's not that hard. I mean, I can go get batteries for my 10-year-old cameras on Amazon. So it's no big deal.
I found a charger for my ancient Garmin watch on eBay because I need to use it in a pinch, and I could not find the charger. So yeah, eBay, it's amazing. Yeah. So a couple more questions. You have taken, as I alluded to earlier, you have taken underwater photos of watches. That might be something a lot of us are, most of us are desk divers. Who are we fooling? But some of us do like to get out and swim with our watches. So what do you use in that instance?
It's funny is only a couple months ago, GoPro is what I've used in the past. The first time I ever did an underwater photo using a GoPro, I think was this year. It was in January when I went to Puerto Rico.
I saw that. Yeah.
And I borrowed my cousin's GoPro. He had a Hero 11 or 10 or something like that. And I just used that to kind of like point and shoot underwater. Essentially, it was basically all I did. And then just a couple months ago, we ended up getting our own, but we got a used one, like a Hero 7, GoPro Hero 7 off eBay. It was like $100 or something. So anytime I've done any underwater shot, that's what I've used is just a GoPro, just kind of, and it's literally a point and shoot situation. Cause I'm under there holding my breath and
yeah,
you know, you're floating around and trying to get, you know, a GoPro super wide angle lens. So it's, you know, not my ideal focal length or whatever, but which is fine. Cause then you get the context of the environment you're in and whatnot. But, yeah, that's really the extent of my underwater stuff. But, I mean, I've taken, There's shots where I've gone into the ocean and taken shots in the ocean with my actual camera, just trying not to get it wet.
Okay.
You know, I'm just standing chest deep or whatever and taking shots. This is the camera I use. It's not waterproof at all, but I'll take it in the ocean and I'll just kind of hold it, try to hold it up high. I'm not shy about, you know, trying to go get the shot with it and worrying about it, but.
So I'm assuming there are, pretty heavy duty waterproof cameras. Are there anything like wetsuits for cameras where you can make them more waterproof?
Yeah, you can get underwater housings for cameras, and that'll be like brand and model specific generally. Or you can go just get little like underwater dedicated cameras. You know, they make, I think Panasonic or Olympus makes them. Maybe even Panasonic and Fujifilm make them. You can go look for those. They're like, you can take them scuba diving type of thing. And they're just dedicated like point and shoot digital cameras, essentially that you can go underwater. So if you're doing a lot of underwater photography recreationally that or like snorkeling and stuff, that might be a good option. They're just like, they're called like rugged cameras. So you can, you know, they're shockproof. You can drop them on a rock or whatever. And it's kind of the idea is to be like a utilitarian thing. But yeah, if you want to go hardcore, you can go get underwater housing for your SLRs or whatever, your mirrorless cameras and whatnot. But gosh, I'm not underwater that much to go invest in that. It just a GoPro. That'll be fine.
Jason Heaton from the Gray NATO podcast, and of course he was with Hodinkee, and he's an author, all that. He dives quite a bit, and he gets some pretty cool underwater shots. And he's always wearing, you know, he'll do, I think he does a lot of like freelance stuff. So he'll be advertising or, you know, working with a watch brand, and he'll take just some amazing watch photos, but also just some, you know, wider shots of him diving and swimming. It's really, his Instagram is a good follow.
Yeah, I would assume he's got, he's using underwater housing.
Yeah,
with a dedicated camera. He's probably got a pretty legit like setup and rig.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
they're Leica guys. I know a lot of the Hodinkee crowd. So I don't know if what he uses exactly, but
yeah, Leica guys. That's such a, so funny. it's such a it plays into that Hodinkee snootiness a little bit. It's like
hipster, I wear
Leicas. Yeah, like yeah. Hipster Leica, but I mean, Leica's legit. I mean, I've never used one, but they are incredible cameras. And like, so it's kind of like a similar to watches too, where it's like some people just scoff at the price of, I just don't understand it. Just who would pay $10,000 for a camera? Like just.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, it's, you know, German, very, very well made. You're talking kind of like what you get with handmade German watches, for example. Like, you know, why does that cost so much? Because it's like, you understand the craftsmanship that right. goes into those things.
Right.
Beyond the technology of it. Like, you know, it's good technology, good sensors, good image quality, all that stuff. Their lenses are incredible. But just, it's just high quality stuff. So yeah, it's the same sort of thing. People scoff at the price of those things, but, and yeah, there are diminishing returns as far as image quality goes, but same with watches, diminishing returns.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. I think anyway. We're all into things that are expensive that we're willing to pay for, that the people in our lives on the outside don't understand. Like,
yeah,
you know, my wife is willing to buy like a, I don't know, whatever she's into. She's into, you know, handbags and different things that that are expensive. And I don't get it. I don't object, but I don't get it. And she's the same way with me and watches, obviously. Like,
yeah,
that
yeah.
looks the same yeah. as all of your other watches. She does not care to take the time to learn and see the differences and why it might cost more. But yeah, we're all into things, whether it be cars or cameras or, you know, whatever. I mean, gosh, you can get deep in the woods on tools, on anything. So,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. What's funny is I don't think my wife really has anything like that that she's into, where it just doesn't. Books.
Yeah,
that's pretty much the only thing she ever wants to buy is just a book. So
and they're priced pretty straightforward. Now some are pretty expensive, but a hardcover and you know,
yeah,
all that. But which, yeah, so I look at the price of books sometimes, like oof.
Yeah.
Seem expensive.
She likes to buy used if she can.
Yep.
Or just go to the library. But yeah, if she wants to buy anything, it's usually a book. It's not anything like a watch or, but it's funny because she could buy multiple books a month or whatever. And it's like, well, it makes me want to buy multiple watches, but it's just not equivalent as far as the price.
Yeah. I know, but I do that with my wife sometimes too. She'll like try to justify to me why she wants to buy something. And then I, in my warped way of thinking, I'm like, oh, okay, well, if she can buy that, then I can buy a watch. But no, I don't need
exactly.
a watch.
Yeah, yeah. I joke about that a lot. If she's like, golly, this is your fourth book on Amazon, or, you know, that's come in the mail lately. It's like, if you can buy so many books, I don't even go buy a watch.
A little bit of a price disparity there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the last part, what do you use to edit? Just a software on your computer?
Yeah, Lightroom
is
just Adobe. I mean, Adobe Photoshop, Lightroom. So it's just Lightroom, and it's fairly basic in terms of what I'm doing to a photograph. So I just messing with contrast and vibrancy of the colors, just in lighting and maybe raising the exposure. So it's just, you know, it's very basic stuff. I'll make sure the white balance is nice and warm. If it's too cold, like, you know, too blue or whatever, I'll make sure it's nice and warm. and I'll do local adjustments. So I'll paint in a little bit of contrast on the watch itself using like a brush or whatever, just to make it pop more or something like that. But yeah, it's fairly straightforward stuff as far as editing, but it is very intentional. It's very intentional, very stylized. I mean, I have a certain way of editing that I, you know, that I like to do, and a certain look that I go for. I try to be very consistent in a look. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Just Lightroom. I don't really even do any sort of Photoshopping. I mean, if there's like,
except for putting dates on watches that they don't belong.
Unless I'm trolling or doing a meme. Yes, I will go. Yeah, that's about the extent of my Photoshop. But yeah, if there's like stuff on the crystal that I didn't see, like a hair or like a piece of dust on the crystal that I didn't see, I'll clone stamp that out, or, you know, take that out, because, you know, that's not altering the watch in any way, but it is just removing something that wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. So stuff like that, I try to clean up. Now, it's interesting. If I see things on the handset or the dial, like in a macro shot, I tend to leave it there, right? Because it's like, it's on the watch. I don't want to like, and it depends on what I'm doing. If I just want to make something look pretty and present it, then I may like clean up a little bit. But like if I'm doing a review, like on Watch Crunch or something, and I'm putting a photo of it on, I wouldn't Photoshop like any sort of dust on the dial out, which is something fun I like to do. I like to write up reviews on Watch Crunch.
Yeah, but, I've read them. That's awesome.
It's another medium of like sharing photography and my work and stuff, because I incorporate a lot of pictures into it. That's actually kind of the primary reason I do those, just to share photos.
But, is that something you were hired to do, or is that just something you can submit and they can use it if you? Yeah,
no. It's just you get a profile, so I just upload it to my profile. It's just cool. Like having a Facebook profile or whatever, and I just put up you can write reviews and do just whatever you know. They have different things, but I actually enjoy that because it's another place to go kind of look at watches or socialize or whatever.
But, yeah.
But anyway, yeah, editing is, and that's fun for me. I actually, pretty much with any photography I do, I enjoy editing so much more than actually shooting almost. I just like bringing it to life, like capturing, getting that canvas or like the blank canvas is the raw file and is the starting point. And then taking that and now refining it and tweaking it and making it into the vision I had in my head when I took the photo on the computer, you know, is like so much fun for me. So it's the same with watches too. So there's a decent amount of editing that goes into it. Just getting the lighting right. And just, you know, I don't know, contrast, color, different things like that.
Cool. Yeah. That's I think most of us are just like, take a picture, post it up on the internet. I think that's what a lot of us do. Well, thank you. This has been hopefully very informational. I've learned a lot. I'm one tidbit is the use of natural light, even with your real estate photography and just having windows, having shades open and natural light coming through. That's super cool. I'm going to incorporate more of that into the photos of watches I take for sure.
Yeah. I recommend it. So yeah, I don't know. I hope it's been helpful a little bit. I know it's probably just been more of an insight into how I like to do things, but natural light is great. If you can, like I said, turn off lights in the house and then go by a window, you're going to have a little bit more moody lighting and probably more interesting lighting doing that.
Yep.
So that's, I think that for me is probably a key factor is that, but I can put my website too, where you can see not just Instagram, but what all my favorite watch shots kind of, you know, in a website. You can look at like real estate photos and stuff. So you can actually get an idea of what it looks like when I say I shoot with the lights off. So you'll get a better understanding of that. We can put that in the show notes too.
Yeah, we'll do. I'll do your Watch Crunch, your website, your Instagram, all that, all things Corey going in the show notes. So, cool. All right, man. Well, thank you for taking the time. I think, we covered everything I wanted to cover. We'll put all of your information in the show notes. So listeners can see your wonderful, amazing work. You are, you are known in our circle anyway as the ace watch photographer. So I really appreciate your insight and your time. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, we'll do another Seiko. You know, I'd like to have a Seiko-centric episode here every so often. I just did, the last one I did was sort of Seiko, so maybe I need to give the listeners a little break here, but I'm sure Seiko will do something coming up that we can discuss and debate and, you know, yeah. For better or for worse.
Or Citizen. I'm telling you, I'm kind of falling down the Citizen rabbit hole right now. I don't know.
I have that Citizen ProMaster Unite that, you know, it's a limited edition. They don't number their limited editions. I don't even know how many there are, but it's, yeah, it's like the dial is made of like recyclable ocean plastics and it's like a really cool color. It's, yeah, it's nice. I mean, they are, I mean, all, like I said in that last episode I did, on a, even a base level ProMaster, you kind of get all the little details Seiko won't even give you on, you know, the SPB models, the $1,300 models, you know, like Citizen really gives you a lot. And then when you go up in price with Citizen, I mean, I think a lot of their watches are using EcoDrive, so they just don't get the respect I think they're due. But yeah, I've never had a quality control issue with Citizen. Always solid.
Yeah. It's so, okay. I will add to that a little bit. First, a correction. The model that I just recently bought is the NY0040.
Okay.
I said 009 earlier. That was wrong. But yes, I will add to the value side of things, because this watch I'm finding to be incredible value. You can find them for around the $200 mark. And I got mine used for $150, which was in mint condition.
Yeah.
And what you're getting for $150 or $200 is great. You know, Diver's 200 meter, you know, ISO.
Legit Diver.
Yeah. Yeah. The quality I feel like is very well done. The bezel action is very robust, 60 click. And to me, it feels very brutal and just very.
Yeah.
Tough and utilitarian. but each click is very solid. There's no back play. And yeah, I think just even looking at the dial, the hands and indices and just the quality of the dial and everything, I've been really impressed. And you're getting, you know, a commensurate automatic movement to like a 4R30, or, you know, arguably even better if you want to, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think for the money and the value, it's Citizen's starting to kind of really pique my interest here. So,
all right, we'll do a Citizen episode. I like that. Yeah, I think I enjoy turning a 120 click bezel more, but I time a lot of my dog runs and things, and timing with a 60 click bezel is just so much easier because you don't have to worry about the in between clicks and all that. You just if I really want to time something on the fly, it's so much easier to obviously to use a 60 click bezel. So Citizen, I like the, I've owned a few ProMasters, older ones and a few of the newer ones. And yeah, I like the bezel action. The grip is not your traditional coin edge, but it's not as useless as the scalloped edge on an Omega or something like that.
Yeah.
Either. It's interesting, but it looks like it wouldn't be that easy to turn, but it really is. I've never had any issues, even with wet fingers.
Yeah. I've noticed with mine, if I try to turn real fast or real quick, it feels really rough and just not as nice. But if you take nice smooth turns with the 60 click, it's very nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. I think I prefer 120 click just generally. Feels nicer, but anyway, well built though.
For sure. For sure. All right. Well, Citizen episode coming soon. Once again, my friend, thank you so much for your time on a Saturday morning. You could be sleeping in, you could be doing a number of things, but you're here with me and we all appreciate it very much. So we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. See ya.
And remember, sometimes you're the dog, sometimes you're the hydrant, but at least you'll be outside. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Watch Dog Podcast. See you later.